Well, I did when I was in there, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, my wife
would be from...
A bit worried about the toys.
You just got to take that on the way and walk through the house. That's the FSA now, and true it all was.
Suddenly appeared.
That's because the food's here. Yeah.
That's the way it works, isn't it?
Yeah.
Everyone always, and usually, I always laugh because every seminar goes up from the basket.
Always, yeah.
And then there's 20 empty rows at the front.
Something about being at school.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm staying away from stay away from the teacher. No, if I thought, is that okay or? I think okay.
Yeah.
I can do it without
positive.
I can do it without it if you want me to. Yes. No, I can. Really, if it doesn't work, I can do it without it. Okay. Hi.
You can have that seat. I want to shift here, yes.
Crystal, do you like love stories?
Yeah.
I've written a book, got to number 70 on Amazon.
Yeah.
It's been republished. If you send me an email, okay, when it's republished, I'll send you a copy of the book.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, what's your email?
Okay. See, there's some cards there. Grab one of those. Okay, just email me. Deal?
Yeah, thank you.
Cool.
That's very kind.
You're welcome. So what should we talk about?
I think you have loads on there.
Too much. I just made it up as I go along. Seriously, if it doesn't come about,
yeah.
I can just use a flip chart, no problem.
Sure?
Yeah?
Oh, right.
Okay, grab a seat.
Thank God.
We're relegated to over here.
Oh, I thought you'd be standing, wasn't it?
anyway. We'll just let them get on with it. We'll just sit over here. Yeah. You can throw that old thing on the floor.
Did you speak at the IFB conference?
Did I?
Last year, yes.
I didn't go last year, no.
Because I'm sure I've seen this, or I've heard of this session, I haven't attended it before.
Right.
I'm sure I've
heard of it. You know better than I do then.
When I just saw the advisory option, I thought that sounds really... Unless there's something else at the IFB,
I was here last year, in this room, last spring or summer.
But you didn't do a session, did you?
Should I have gone?
No, I'm just trying to...
Okay. I get around, as they say.
Yeah.
Bad things said about me, really bad things. So is this the first time you've been to this branch meeting?
No.
Okay.
I attend more often.
Right. So what do you get out of coming here?
Because it's so easy to get busy and get into the job you do day-to-day.
Right.
Because there's just so much to do. Instead of, you know, a staff like thinking about how you can do it.
Right.
This is good because it's like, you know, not only I get the CP, but that's on the side today. So find out how it is. Because everyone else is here.
Yeah. Okay.
So
is that right?
Yeah.
Good. Let's hope they can teach you something. Let's hope they can teach me something. Yeah.
You do some speaking.
Yeah, that's what they sell me. Yeah. I'm hoping you've got some really good ideas so you can share with me.
Well worth it.
I'm going to be sitting down. How are you?
I'm fine, thanks.
I'm going to be sitting down, so why don't you grab?
Yeah, okay.
It's nice to see you. Yeah. So we're still knocking this punch into shape,
are we? We are, yes, yeah. We're getting there, though.
How's the wealth management side of things? Because there's two sides.
There's only one side now.
Yeah. It's all
the advisory side gone.
Really? Just focusing on wealth management?
Yeah, we got rid of hundreds.
Really?
Mm. We're down to about 47 planners.
Wow.
So that's our advisory side now.
So did you just feel that the culture of that side was just wrong?
Yes.
And that's not what you wanted to do anymore?
And management said, you know, the model that we promoted, the financial planning model, is the way we're going to go, and everybody's got to buy into it.
They don't like it.
Salaried, and they've got to get the qualifications, and if they don't, they're off.
There's the door.
Yeah. Yeah. And they said, even if we go right back to nothing, we'll...
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Because that's what we want.
Good on you.
Yeah.
Good
well,
on you.
Well, Suvan has brought in, because that's the model they've got in Australia with IPAC.
Yeah.
And he wanted it as well, but the only way he could do it was to sweep the board clean, really, and you know, because before everybody was just tinkering around at the edges and it was just
playing at it.
Yeah. So
it's good.
Good.
Did the press give you a hard time?
Oh, they're always ringing up.
They like a good story.
Yeah, but there was nothing there for them. You know, they thought there was more to it than there was, but there was nothing, and we've really had to handle the press.
Yeah, this is just where we're going. So where's Mike gone?
Well, he's sort of taking a sabbatical.
Yeah.
He wasn't happy with the big company ethos for a while, and he's not sure. He's going to have to do some travelling with his wife.
Yeah.
And he's not sure what he wants to do then, whether he'll come back or whether he'll start up his own. And
because he's peaked and he's worked really hard. He's got what he's got. It's probably quite... That's enough for a while.
Yeah.
Just have a break.
He's got the money to be able to do it.
Yeah,
absolutely. That's the nice thing about it. Yeah. You can take a year out and then decide what to do.
It's good.
Yeah.
I'll probably do the same.
Yeah. We've been moving out of this office anyway. In a couple of weeks' time.
So Julie's still here?
Yes, she is. Yeah.
Good.
She is.
Well, I'll do as I'm told today.
Yeah. I'm just going to say this more.
Yes, of course. Yes, please do. There's a lot of bodies in here. We're going to get quite stuffy, aren't we?
Lolly's just going to go check if any food lot coming in and we're ready.
Okay.
This is not long or short as you want. Andrew from Transact, let's watch another meeting. It's just going to be quick 10 minutes at the end.
Okay. He wants it at the end rather than the beginning?
Yeah, he just wants to make sure we've done. It goes on a bit sometimes. As I've told him, this is not until the judge is back.
Sure.
Morning.
Hi.
And he knows that, you know, we're going to finish or aim to finish at a certain time, in his mind anyway, but you take as long as you want and then he'll adapt his, shorten his, whatever.
All right.
Oh yes, I heard all about going to Sierra Smith.
Sierra Smith?
Yeah, in London apparently.
Right, shall we start? First off, thank you all for coming. Just a quick, before I introduce our main speaker, just a couple of points. Did you have an email recently? It would come from the IFP, but probably with my name on it, to do the new sponsor grant management. Some people did have it, some didn't. Every time we get a new sponsor, because I'm on the newsletter, you tend to find out just if you happen to go on the website and then a new icon that scrolls down the right hand side, or if you go to one of the conferences. So what we thought we'd do is just, if we do get a new sponsor, send you an email saying we've got a new sponsor, this is who they are, and then it's up to you, you know, so whether you want to have a look. Grant management do sort of specialist property funds. But I'll get the email sent out again, and obviously any guests we've got here today, I'll make sure you're included on that. May or may not be of interest, but certainly worth a look. Just a quick thank you to start with. Andrew from Transact's kind of agreed to sponsor the meeting today, which means you can get free food. And obviously thanks again to Marlene and Bluefin for letting us use their offices. I think this is the most we've had at one of these meetings for a while, so we'll have to rearrange the tables, obviously. But you are moving.
Yes, 1st of July, Helmut House, but just around the corner, Churchill Way.
Right, so
I'm going to have facilities there.
Yeah. Next time you get an email saying there's a branch meeting, it's at Bluefin, don't come here.
Yeah.
But I'll put the details and the directions on the new email. Andrew's going to just do a quick piece at the end, just on a couple of things that are recent developments, I suppose is the easiest way of putting it. In September, all the branch chairs around the country get together to put the programme together for the meetings for next year. Now, a couple of you have already said, Richard sent me an email with a couple of suggestions on it. If there are any topics, specific topics that you want to cover in these meetings, let me know. Two reasons. One, it makes my job a lot easier, and obviously the more relevant these things are for you, the better. The one thing that we will have, I'm going to try and get in for the end of this year as well, under the CPD requirements, we're all required to do a certain number of hours ethics. Trying to find out what qualifies as ethics is the challenge. One of the suggestions I had was talk to the University of Leeds, because they've got an ethics department. I'd love to come down here. But other than ethics, which you can leave with me, anything else, let me know. If you haven't seen it, the conference programme now for the National Conference, which is 20th to the 22nd of September in Celtic Manor again, so no excuses, this is local. The full programme's been announced now. It's all on the website. If you want to go and have a look, it does clash still with the PFS National Conference, so they understand it. And both organisations are saying they're not going to budge. But I was talking to an ex-PFS branch chairman, I suppose you call him, recently, and he said that they've just dug their heels in, even though they've never had the PFS conference in September before.
And we booked ours first.
And we booked ours first.
They didn't think they should ask us what date we were
going to. But there we are, so it may be a case of choosing ours.
Hey, God, I was very embarrassed when she asked me for the dates of the conference.
Yeah. Financial Planning Week. I've got on the last week email. If you haven't seen what goes on in Financial Planning Week, have a look on the website, because the website is still up from last year. I'd ask for all volunteers, I suppose you call it, anybody who's interested in getting involved in this. Very, very briefly, all Financial Planning Week is about is it's a national campaign to try and get everybody, maybe not your typical clients, everybody, to think about money. And think about how they plan their finances, as the name suggests. Other regions had some successes last year, getting mentioned in the local press, the print and the broadcast media. So what we're going to try and do is get a group of us together and just see what we think we can do. This is not about promoting the IFP. This is not about promoting our individual firms. This is about getting people to think about their money. So if anybody is interested, let me know. A couple of people already said they would, and a couple of people today have already said that as well. If you are interested, let me know, or even if you haven't got the time to get involved, but if you've got some ideas, particularly if you've got connections in the media, that we think we can use. And what will happen is the IFP will do all of that for my clients, so everything will go out centrally. It was a big campaign last year, that the main sponsors were people like National Savings, which picked it up. So it is a big deal. It's just we've never done much locally. It's the third year now it's running. South Wales West Conference, which is our regional conference. I know I mention it every month, but hey, 2nd of December. We're holding it at the Bristol again, probably the Tech Hotel again, because it's fairly central. The reason it's central is because our region is combined with Bristol, Bath and South West. So because it's on that M4-M5 junction, it's easy for most people. 7th of September is the next meeting. We're going to break over the summer holidays. Danny Cox has agreed to come over from Hargreaves. Regardless of the moment I think Hargreaves, the one thing I'm very good at is getting the name in the press. Danny is the immediate past chair of the Bristol branch. He's often in the press, as you probably see, and he's a very nice guy. He's going to come over and talk to us. That meeting will probably be an early, late afternoon, early evening meeting, just because of his diary and various other things. I'll let you know as soon as I know on that one. But just in terms of the date, 7th of September. Right. If anybody came last year, you remember David Scarlett. We had good attendance last year, but this is the best attendance we've had, well, certainly for a few years, it's fair to say. The feedback we had from last year for everybody that attended was excellent, which is why I asked David to come back again. I'll let David do the introductions about what it is he does it. Some of you may know him already, some of you may see him in the books, but without further ado, I'll hand you over to David.
Thanks, Gareth. Thank you. Whatever you're going to say it really carefully. Did anybody get a copy of the synopsis of today's meeting, what the subject was all about? No, I don't think you did. No. I'm sure you received it, but nobody reads it. I looked at the synopsis that I wrote 9 months ago and I thought, oh, I wonder what that's all about. I couldn't remember. So, since you didn't read the synopsis, I wonder why you're here today. Apart from really enjoying each other's company, which I think is half the objective. Does anybody ever feel isolated in their business as an IFA? Can't be honest. Yeah, it gets lonely out there. And I think these meetings are invaluable for sharing real ideas and just companionship. Since you didn't read the synopsis, and I'm the only one that did, and even I didn't know what it was all about when I read it, what is it you want out of today? What it's called the High Profit... Well, you know what the title is. It's called the High Profits Advisor. With that in mind, and only with that in mind, what would you like me to share with you today? What would you like to get out of today that would help your businesses? Real ideas. Don't waffle. Make it specific. What ideas would you like to get out of today's meeting? You've got an hour, and then I'm off. Okay, because I'm off with Craig. But in fact, we're keeping an eye on Andrew, isn't it?
Yep.
Yeah, because we're looking for somebody to buy our lunch, you know. Yeah. What ideas would you like? What questions do you have about business that you think, if I could find the answer to this, I'd be a really happy person? Because if you haven't got any, I'm going home. I'm off to London. Ideas.
Get rid of time wasters.
Time wasters, as in clients?
Yes.
Okay. So how do we deal with time wasters? Okay. Anything else that would make your business more profitable?
How do you charge?
Effectively,
in terms of, you know, the fees and commission and how much to charge.
So how much and how do I charge, yes? Last one. And then we're out. I've thrown two away already. Don't worry. Anything else that you'd like?
How do you go beyond the numbers? How do you add real value?
What does that mean? It's a lovely phrase. I keep hearing it all the time. I'm not sure I understand what it means anymore.
Well, a lot of financial planning can be just a numbers exercise.
Yeah.
You are here, you want to go there, therefore you need to do that.
Okay.
In order to create long-term repeat income that is increasing, however, you need client loyalty.
Okay.
Client loyalty comes about because they want to come back to you. So what makes them come back to you?
So the question is, how to increase... Oh dear. Can you see that?
Yeah.
How to increase client loyalty so that they
keep coming back.
Come back to me. Marlene, is there another selection of pens before, I wonder? Anything else? One more, and then we'll move on. Is that it?
Can yeah? I say, it's again clients, because at the moment, I've got clients who pay, I get renewal commission. I'm trying to work going forward on that sort of some kind of fixed fee retainer basis.
Right.
I'm trying to get clients to understand what they pay now and what value they would get if they moved onto a fixed fee. Because I think a lot of clients just pay this, they get charged this renewal commission. I think sometimes they don't really know how it all works. As much as you tell them, they don't really understand. Whereas then when you go to them and say, this is my proposition going forward, it's going to cost you X amount.
Okay.
Don't necessarily then value that.
I hear three questions so far. I just want to stick to one question from amongst that. How do I what? And that may be part of the problem.
Yeah, probably. You're absolutely right. How do I get clients
to
accept fees going forward?
Okay. How do I get clients, how about this, to want to pay fees? Who here charges fees for advice before implementation? Very good. Who here charges fees for advice before implementation without any commission offset involved at all? Very good. Who here charges fees for implementation without any commission offset at all? With no commission involved?
On a corporate basis, but not.
Who here charges fees for ongoing service year after year without any commission involved at all? Who here has been in business as a financial advisor for longer than 3 years? Longer than two? Longer than one? Okay, who here has been in financial services for longer than 3 years? Okay. Well, I'm really not that bright, I just know stuff. You need to ask yourself the question, I've only been advising advisors for 3 years. I was advising non-advisors before then, owners of small businesses and large businesses. And my clients pay me between £5,500 and £9,000 a year. Why can I do that after 3 years? And how can you? Might be a question. Okay, is that okay? So, how do I get rid of time wasters? How much and how do I charge? How can I increase loyalty so they keep coming back and wanting to pay more? And how can I get clients to actually want to pay me fees rather than say, we'll actually take it out in commission? Yeah? Is that? Right, I'll keep that up there and refer to, see if I answer any of it. I might not answer any of that stuff. I may just say, forget that nonsense. I'm not into all that. Right, the high profits advisor is the clue. I want you to create a business which ideally is not dependent on commission in any shape or form whatsoever. Because I have to tell you, I had a chat with somebody, got quite angry with me the other day, a client. So I said, well, we need to part ways. He got angry because I told him, with my other clients, the reason you're coming to me is because you're brilliant financial advisors and financial planners, but you have not a clue how to run a business. He got angry because he'd been in business for 25 years. It's pretty logical. Well, I've been here for 25 years. Kid, you know? All the alpha male coming out. And I said, well, it's not difficult to be in business in an industry which pays obscene amounts of commission to fund your operation. It's really not difficult at all. You just have to work your socks off and keep on working. And the clue is, there's a really great trick in this industry. You go to bed in the night, okay? You go to bed at night and you get up in the morning. That's it. You go to bed at night and you get up in the morning and you keep on working, and because they pay obscene amounts of commission, you will survive. I'm talking about doing more than surviving. I'm talking about building a fabulous business in which fabulous financial planning is done, where clients will want to pay you significant fees. I'm talking £5,000 to £10,000 a year, and will want to keep coming back. That's the kind of business I'm talking about. So being in business for 25 years is not the name of the game. He came to me because he was exhausted and he wanted to get out and he couldn't. In which case, if he's trapped, the last thing he's doing is running a business. He's running a financial planning practice in which he is the business, and the business actually can't survive without him, and nobody's going to buy it because the business is him. It's not a business. That's just a self-employed job. And it would have been killing him. Really was. It was literally physically killing him. And he needed out. How do you do that? Here's the problem. Do you mind if I just dim that a bit? Is that okay? Yeah? Still see each other? Can you see me all this while? Yeah? Okay. Here's the problem. It's an advantage sometimes. Here's the problem I have with people I work with in the industry. We've just been around for too long. So I know you youngsters are, you know. But look at us, look. I mean, look at me. I'm falling apart. We've just been around for too long. And you may say, well, what's ants got to do with it? I used to love studying ants as a 10-year-old. I knew everything there was to know about ants. I used to watch them march through the woods. They really do march. And you've seen all the films on Disney? Well, that's really how it goes. I used to wonder and study, there was no Google then, how do they do that? How do they keep on track, whether it's a straight line or a wonky line, every little ant is walking the same way on the same track, and they're all just passing each other on the way to and from food or whatever it is they're trying to do. And they never stray off, and if they do, they come back really fast to the track. How do they do that? And the answer is, what? How do they do that? How do they know exactly, and they, you know, they're partially blind, they can't see an awful lot, how do they know how to stick on the path and never get lost? Because they do, you watch them, it's really clever, it's magic. Guess, how do they do that? If you were an ant, what would you do?
Scent? Scent? Scent?
Yeah? Tell me more.
Well, they can smell each other. But the path that they travel down there, they leave a smell that the ant can pick up. It strays off and goes back up.
Yeah, they leave a chemical trail. They actually lay a chemical trail. Okay? And you may say, well, this is really interesting, David. Love hearing stories about you when you're 10, but what's this got to do with my business and trying to keep clients and make lots of fees and profits? Well, the problem I have with most people coming to me is that you do the same. We face problems as we grow up from childhood, from babyhood, and the brain says this: what's the problem? Let's try and work it out. Kind of talks to itself. And it kind of gets to a solution. Oh, here's a solution. Right. And the next time I come to a similar problem, what the brain does is says, have I met this kind of problem before? Yes. Where is it? And it lays a chemical trail through your head, through all the neurons and the different paths through your mind. And it lays a chemical trail called myelin. Myelin. And the next time it meets a similar problem, it says, how did I solve that problem? Even if the solution was pretty stupid and actually not that terribly effective, and the guy down the road or the lady down the road has got a 3 times more effective solution, the brain doesn't care. The brain just says, to heck with this hard work, I'm lazy, I want to reach the most efficient solution, so I just follow the myelin trail that the neurons laid in the last time I met this problem. Do you get it? And it myelinates itself. It lays a chemical trail, literally. And it looks for the chemical trail dealing with the last problem, and it follows it. Even if the solution was ridiculous, it still follows it. Even if the solution was incredibly ineffective, and down the road is a solution 3, 5, 10, 100 times better, it still follows the myelin trail. And the problem I have with IFA is because we are so long in the tooth, many of us, some of us are still kids, is you've laid years of myelinated trails. And then you come to me and say, I'd like you to change the way clients think about me or the way I can charge my fees. And I think, and you ask me, what do I do? And I think, there's the wrong question. The question is, how do I think differently? Because I've got 15 to 20 years of myelin trail. I want you to unmyelinate and make me think differently. I have to tell you, that's hard work. And that's why we struggle. That's why educating financial advisors who've been around a long time is actually quite hard work, because you fight me.
Is that because, I mean, I'm speculating here, that a lot of advisors have a similar training background?
It's because you all spend time either isolated, having solved problems and think that's the answer, or when you meet with somebody, they've solved a problem, maybe similar to you, and think, well, it's got to be the answer because there's 100,000 of it, or 40,000, or 10,000, or 5,000, all doing the same thing. You all keep copying each other. And because it works, you assume that's the solution. The fact that somebody else, maybe 5% of the population, works 10 times more effectively doesn't seem to come into the picture. You just myelinate yourselves, and it's hard work changing the industry, as Marlene well knows. Yeah? So just think about that. That's part of the problem. The way you thought before, whatever got you here over the last 10, 15, 20 years, I have to tell you, against your competition, which is becoming far more aggressive, far more sophisticated, coming in from the outside into this industry, and know this stuff in a way that we've never been trained and taught, whatever got you here will not get you there into the future. I'm not talking 10 years in the future, I'm talking 3 to 5. You think RDR is a problem. RDR is just a side issue. What is happening in this industry makes RDR a joke. There is change that's already happening, consolidation and change in behaviour, that unless you know what's going on, you are going to survive, but you are going to get left behind by very sophisticated players. I recommend you listen to Danny Cox. You may not like what they do, but they don't care. They know exactly what business they're in, and they're absolutely brilliant at it. And if you talk to Danny Cox or any of his directors, in the first 2 sentences they'll use the word marketing, because that's what they know brilliantly, and they're fabulous at it, which is why the public absolutely love them, and why the stock market thinks they're a darling of the business, and why they can get 10, 15, 20 times their revenue stream in terms of valuation, whereas most IFAs struggle to get more than 1.5 times. So listen to Danny, he's got a lot to teach you. Okay, spent a lot of time on that. It's just an intro. I think the intro's 15-minute intro. Got no chance finishing this presentation. Okay, the challenge with increasing your profits, your revenue, and your fees, and making clients more loyal, is that we tend to spend a lot of time doing things that they don't want. Now, you've seen this before. You've seen this in many presentations, but you need to revisit it. Most of us, most of you, spend a lot of time in this area here. Look at it. Gathering data, analysing data, preparing plan. Who here prepares plans which they can charge more than, say, £2,000 for? Before implementation. More than 5,000. More than 10. I have to tell you, charging 5,000, that's a serious plan. Okay? And we spend a lot of time. The green represents what they're interested in. The orange represents what you spend time doing. I'll repeat that. The green represents what they really want from you and value. The orange represents what you spend all your time doing. They don't value most of what you're doing. And you have to find a way to stop doing the things that they don't value and delegate it to somebody else if you're doing it. And if you're doing that, then brilliant. But this is what, see the change in the shape of the curve? Curve comes up here. This is what they really value. Not because I say so, because every single survey of quality clients keeps saying the same story. They value this stuff. The way you present the information, help them to plan. The ongoing service. Who here sends out quarterly reports to their clients?
Some.
6 monthly reports, annual reports and annual review meetings. Okay. If all you're doing, I don't care whether you're earning £1 million a year in fees, if what you're doing is communicating quarterly with a client, in today's world, that won't hack it. It just won't hack it.
So what do you mean by that?
If all you're doing is communicating with your best 100 clients on a quarterly basis, it's not enough. That to me is not an ongoing quality of service. Something needs to be happening more than once every 90 days to, in their head, be not yours, it's not about you and me, it's about them. In their head, to be deemed to be worth a lot of money and to be deemed as high quality service. I communicate with my clients once a week minimum. Sorry? 100 clients. You find a way to communicate. You don't necessarily have to do the communication. But to communicate once a quarter with your top 100 clients means that you're never going to be able to charge the fees that you're really worth. It's just not enough. In today's world...
What do you mean by communicate?
What do you mean by communicate? I do mean...
Face-to-face.
Yeah, but we communicate with each other in a lot more ways than face-to-face.
It's contact, basically.
Structured communication, written, verbal, meetings, whatever it is, communicate with them in a structured, consistent, regular, valuable fashion. How do you find out what they value? You ask them. And you don't ask them yourselves, because we ask the wrong questions. We skew our questions to suit ourselves and our emotions. Get a professional in who knows how to survey and ask questions of the right nature concerning what clients really want and listen to them. One of the worst things we can do as business people is to pretend we know what our clients really want just because we've worked with them for 10 years. I remember looking at a survey by the Wharton Business School. Heard of Wharton Business? Yeah? Heard of Yale? Harvard? Okay, Wharton matches any of those in any global survey of business schools in the world. And Wharton specialises a lot in the financial services industry. Whenever major groups in the USA want, in the financial service industry, want to have a look at their business and how they're really doing rather than how their staff or directors think they're doing, they call Wharton in and say, analyse what my clients really think about our business. I remember, I think it's First Boston called them in, huge group, got trillions under management, and asked them to analyse what the high quality, highly trained, very experienced, long in the tooth advisors thought clients really wanted, and then they asked of each advisor, the top 50 clients, about what they really, really wanted and didn't want from the advisor. And after some very intense surveying and measurement and all this kind of metric stuff that we're not trained in and they are, because that's their job, research, the senior partners of First Boston, a huge organization, was scared witless. Very successful organization. Because what the advisors thought the clients really wanted and didn't want was poles apart from what the clients were saying. And here's the question they asked themselves. Hold on a second. If we're making a fortune doing what clients really don't want, what would happen to our business if we did what they really wanted? Interesting question. So find out what they really want and start doing it. Here's what they don't want. I want you to write down in 30 seconds, and we used this one last time, but I'm just passing through this exercise, but write it down. What is that lady saying about that man in her bonce? What is she saying to herself about this bloke? Look at the cartoon, but enough about me. 30 seconds, write down what you honestly think she's saying. Go. This is quite an important exercise. I wouldn't kind of skip this. Think this is a joke. This is serious. We think we know what they want, but we never actually get anybody to ask them. Just because we conduct discovery or fact-finding meetings. Can't stand that word, fact-finding. What is this woman saying to herself, really? I don't mind if it's not printable, but you are on record. Look at this smarmy guy here and tell me what she's saying. So ask the ladies. Marlene, what's she saying? Okay, what's she really saying? Nice and loud. Sorry. Hasn't got a clue. What's she saying? Yeah, now this is a romantic situation.
Oh,
yeah? Look at it on the couch, he's got his arm around. This is not a client meeting, okay?
Same thing.
Yeah, is he ever going to ask about me? One more.
Leave me alone.
Yes.
Stop talking.
The most constant one through every IFP meeting in the last 2 years has been, what a creep. And a lot more rude than that too. I mean, let's be real here. She would be thinking something quite strongly, like, let me out of here. What a complete creep. Because that's what he is. Enough about me. Look at all the cuts and the pictures of him. If that's the case, and I do believe it is the case, I think that's quite real, why do I see this in all the material of most financial planning and wealth management and IFA groups? Why do I see this? What a creep. And we wonder why clients don't see us and pay us and remain loyal in the way that we desire them to. And this particular presentation is not about marketing, it's just about how do I get them to pay me what I'm really worth and create a very high profits business that's sustainable without me. Without me. Well, you don't start there. If I look at your brochure, your business card, and I see this stuff, I know you haven't a clue. Not a clue. Concerning what people really, really want and think. Let me just move on. You may be brilliant. You may be earning £1 million fees. You should be on two in less time. Here's what I see. I recommend that you go to any IFA website and have a look at the homepage. And if this is on the homepage, they need to sack their marketing and web designer.
There was a speaker at the RFP Art of the Science of Financial Planning a few weeks ago who said exactly the same thing about websites. It should not be about the company, it should be about their client.
Not on the homepage. You have to have an About You, because that's the second most looked at tab on any website. All the research shows, but not on the homepage.
Most IFA's websites are dull and boring.
Yeah, seriously dull and boring. But more than that, they're actually quite offensive. They're actually quite repulsive.
The problem is the compliance officers. I wanted to do something like that with our website, but the compliance officer just wasn't buying it at all.
Okay, then you need to work with your compliance officer until they do, because this is good business for financial advisors. Okay, the top financial advisors with heavyweight compliance officers do this. They get it right. That's why they're top of the industry. You're going to say? Yeah. Drop me an email. I'll send you a list of some. Yeah? There are some good ones. There are some really, really bad ones by some really well-known financial planners. I won't say that here. And if they just got it right, they'll be even more effective and successful. Start with their problems. What the client is asking is this. I don't care about the problem with financial advice and really most professions is that we're in love with our profession. We're in love with our skills. We've worked so hard to gain them. We've worked with clients for so long, we fall in love with ourselves and what we're able to do. They don't care. I don't care about your stupid questionnaire and your four-hour meeting and your financial cash flow forecasting thing. What I care about is, will any of that produce the outcomes in my life and solve the problems that I need dealt with and the outcomes I desire. That's what I really want. And this all this other stuff you put me through, it just gets in the way. And I know I have to go through it, but I just want the outcome, the result. I don't want the stuff that you're in love with. Leave me the phrase that I left last time. I love this phrase because it hits home on a very sensitive point that you and I need to understand in any business on this planet. Here's the phrase, you ready? Do suggest you write this down. If you can articulate my problems better than me, if you can articulate my problems better than me, better than even I could, if you can write them down and communicate them better than I could, two things happen. One, you have my attention. Two, I inherently believe you possess the solution. I'll repeat that once more. If you can articulate my problems better than I can, two things happen. One, you have my attention. Two, I inherently believe for some reason you possess the solution. That's just how we think as human beings. And we both need to recognize that. Okay, that's just principle one. I'm going to rattle through the next 9 principles. 10 principles here today, because you need to get back to your business. High profits, principle number 2, HP, high profits, is how magnetic is your business? Do you chase them or do they chase you as prospective clients? Do the clients that you would love to have on board, and will come to you on your terms, paying exactly the kind of fees you want, whether it's for advice, implementation or ongoing service, all three, do you chase them or do they chase you? When I got marketing right a number of years ago, by accident, because I told you I'm not that clever, it was just, but I then reviewed what I'd actually done and thought, that is amazing. And then I met a marketing consultant who said, that's amazing. I thought, well, thank goodness I bumped into it by accident. I had 7 clients a week phoning me of exactly the right kind and quality that I desired for my business until it became a nightmare. I couldn't control it. And I went from an office in an attic in King's Cross in London. King's Cross is the red light district of London. So I was in the attic with a daisy wheel, we're talking Jurassic, a daisy wheel printer, took 20 minutes to turn out a letter, and a PC, and a cold attic with one secretary, and that's all I could afford. To the whole floor of Western Australia House, 5 support staff, 3 advisors as well as myself, in the space of 18 months. I just got client attraction right. Not any old client, but the right quality of client paying me the right fees. That was back in 89. Now you know how really old I am. Okay, but get client. Most of us are brilliant at this. We're brilliant once the client is in front of us at just empathetically influencing them to do what we want to do. That's selling, and you should never lose that skill. But in terms of business, it's winning battles. It's tactical, it's immediate, it's self-gratifying, and it's often personality-based, because you're just such nice people, and clients fall in love with you, want to marry you and have your babies, and that's just the guys. Okay? Really dangerous business, personality-based business. But selling, which you must not lose the skill of, is that within business. But a magnetic business understands that a company that can put in front of that the game of marketing and understand it and win is playing a completely different game altogether. It's long term, it's strategic, it's systemic, it's and systematic, it's far reaching, it takes a different level of thinking altogether. Salesmen are lousy marketeers in most cases. You need to be both if you're going to thrive into the future. Not survive, thrive. Forget RDR, beyond that, thrive. You have to learn this game. listen to Hargreaves Lansdown and learn what can I learn from them that I could put into my business, because they're brilliant at it. They just think a different game to most of you. They're on a different planet. And they win a war whilst we think we're doing wonderful. When they get... I had somebody say to me, I don't have no competition. That's what he said. We're in Berkshire, hotel. He said, I don't have no competition. And I looked at him and there was this horrible silence in the room. I just stared at him thinking, either I'm an idiot or he's an idiot or I'm in the wrong presentation. And the room went silent. And then a lady said, what do you mean? Somebody actually dared to say, what do you mean you don't have no competition? He said, well, when they come to me, they all sign up. And the bloke at the back said, what? What do you think they said?
What about the ones that don't come?
Yeah. The clients that you really want are not coming to you in the first place. Your competition is winning them before they ever get to your door. Marketing. They come to you. You must... Sorry, last October I wrote this thing here. It's free. Okay, if you want it, ask me for it. It's a 79-page manual, 10 stages to organise your marketing strategy. I don't care how many fees you charge or how many millions you make, that can multiply. Get marketing right. Win the war and stop trying to fight battles. You're going to win those anyway because you're good. Okay, quickly tell me about the perception the market has regarding those brand names. Tell me why they're different. Talk to me. Tell me where they're positioned in your mind and heart.
Which one's
up market? So Waitrose is up market?
Yeah.
Okay.
Value.
Okay, that's value. Stack them high.
Yeah.
Yeah, value, sell them quite cheaply. Okay. So where's M&S versus Waitrose?
So one is Aldi, Sainsbury's is 2, M&S is 3, Waitrose is 4.
Yeah, it's not a matter of being better or worse than. They're just purposely designed to appeal to a different part of the market. They've decided what they want you to think about them. I'll repeat that. They have decided what they want you to think about them. Have you done the same? Have you decided what strangers are going to think and feel about you before they have ever met you? If you haven't, you are losing the game of marketing. You're losing the war. See, M&S don't care about Aldi because they don't want you to think about M&S in the way you think about Aldi. So they position themselves in a different part of the market. It's called positioning. And you need to learn the game of positioning yourself in the hearts and mind of your perfect, ideal, most valuable client who will pay you the fees that you want them to pay. How do you do that? Well, learn about marketing to position your business and your brand in their heads and hearts so that when somebody asks them, what do you think about that business and what do? They will say exactly what you want them to say. What was the brand I used last year? Can you remember what brand I used last year?
Starbucks.
Was it
Thai? Yeah, I went like this and I said, tell me the brand name. And all the women said Harley Davidson. And I looked at the ages of these delightful ladies and I thought, now tell me the name of the film from the 1960s when you weren't even born yet. And they all came up with the answer, which was what?
Easy Rider.
And they weren't even born yet. Yeah, I know. We didn't remember either, because we weren't born then. They weren't even born. So here's the question, because this is not a joke, okay? We kind of chuckle because it is funny, but you need to ask yourself this question quietly in this room. If I wasn't born then, and their brand name, because they don't sell many motorcycles, Honda and Suzuki sell far more, but their brand name impinges itself upon my mind and my heart, and I wasn't even born when the film was made and released. Here's the question, you ready? How do they do that to me? How do they do that to me? And the corollary to that question for you is what? What's the question now you need to ask yourself?
Why
after that question. How do they do that to me?
How do I do that to
them? Got it. How do I do that to them? You don't need to spend £1 billion in advertising. You need to work out where you want to be in their heads and hearts and then make sure that message gets out there. Marketing. Listen to Danny Cox. Okay, here's another way to get them to pay you the fees you're really worth. Recognise, first of all, that there are three stages, aren't there, of charging fees, broadly speaking, whatever the strategy is you use. AIR, which stands for?
Advice. Review.
Review, okay. I don't really review meetings. I'll touch upon review meetings in a second. This is review process throughout every year until the day you or they die. Okay. Advice, implementation, review. You and I should be able to charge all three stages. To me, that's a given. Where do you think, in looking at those bar charts in the second slide, what do you think they really value most?
Review.
They value that highly. What else do they really value? Yeah, the quality and professionalism and the appropriateness and relevance of your advice to their lives and your ongoing quality of service and relationship, ongoing throughout each year, and I don't mean once a quarter. To me, that's pathetic. To touch me once a quarter when I'm paying you £5,000 to £10,000 a year, that's hopeless. Absolutely hopeless. That's not good service. That's what they value. Where do we get paid most? Doesn't make any sense. The whole industry is on its head. The whole industry is just cockamamie. It's a nonsense structure. And we need to turn that on its head and have it our way. And here's what you do. You recognise that this is what they value. People will pay you increasingly high remuneration in fees in particular when you move up from products, spend more time on service and develop better relationships. Move away from talking and thinking about products. Move into the quality and consistency of your service and its relevance to their lives. You have to make a decision here as a financial advisor, and you've probably made it, most of you, but here's a reminder. Are you advising their money or are you advising the client? Are you advising the client or are you advising their money? Make up your mind.
Well, this is the point I was trying to get when I asked the question, was given the threats that are going on. I mean, I have a number of clients now, I don't know my time, but who will come to me before they'll go to the accountant. And that, to my mind, is a big tick. I want more of that.
Okay.
So
then watch this. Product, service, relationship. They'll pay you most highly for the quality and the difference of your relationship. The quality and the difference of your, how is it different to, not better than, different to the next financial planner in your town or in the country? How is that relationship different to? You need to work that out. Why am I different to, not better than, the next person? And if you don't know the answer, you need to get some help somewhere to make it different, not better than. But that's the increasing value. Here's how your profits and revenue will increase. When your communication, your thoughts, the time you spend with your client moves from product conversations to the quality and consistency of a service to the quality and difference of your relationship. Now, there's a second I've just changed it on it, turned it on its head. For products, read tools. Who here uses cash flow forecasting software? It's not a service, it's a tool, it's a product. Okay, how sophisticated it is. People will not pay you what you think they'll pay you for a tool. They'll pay you, but not what you think it's worth. It's just a tool. And that's the lowest form of value in the client's head in this process. What am I made? You spent 10 years trying to get away from selling products, and now I've stuck product on the screen. What do I mean by that? Think about the previous screen. Now I'm putting. What do I mean by that?
Sorry, what was that? What did you say that side there?
What does the word product mean in this context? Think of the previous screen and what was there before. What was the word there before in that? Service. Now I'm calling it product. Why do I do that? Why do I do that?
Because you've got an efficient system in place.
Yeah, it is still efficiency and effectiveness. Are you able as a business leader or as an advisor to take a very complex, sophisticated service and so package it and communicate it that it's as simple, as clear and as consistent to understand within seconds, I don't mean hours, seconds, almost as if it was a shrink wrap product? Are you able to do that? Do you have the skill to do that? Or have you got someone to help you do that? I'll give you an example. I walked into a very well-known financial planner in the southeast, very well-known, high-profile, often a new model advisor. I sat with him and he called me in for some help. David, I want more of the quality of clients that I really want, paying me the kind of fees I really want, coming to my office, and I want to stop chasing them. How do I do that? I sat with him, and about an hour and a half into the conversation, I said, Fred, not his name, tell me your fee structure. Because I'm looking at the material, I don't see it anywhere. 20 minutes later, bear in mind, I started charging fees in 1989, and this conversation was in 2009. 20 minutes later, he was still trying to explain his fee structure. And I looked at him, I said, and you're asking me why clients don't come to you in droves of the right quality and the right type? I'm a fee-based client. I haven't a clue what you're talking about. Not a clue. You haven't learnt the skill, the communication skill, of packaging your complex, sophisticated service in such a way that within seconds I get it. That's a skill. It's a marketing skill. And when you learn it, people who you want to come to you will get it in seconds and will pay you the fees that you want them to pay you. When you don't know how to do that, seek outside help. Stop pretending that we are masters of communication. I'm not. I have to have a marketing consultant. But now I can package mine and people understand it within seconds. Can I do that to your business? Could I, within seconds, understand the service and the fee structure so that it's almost a shrink-wrap product that I get fast? Relationship. Stop getting them to build the relationship with you. Start getting them to build the relationship with your business. Why?
Because you might not always be there.
Yeah. Personality-led businesses do not have high value. But when the business culture and ethos and everybody communicates in the same way when they're talking to your client, and you could walk out for 6 months as Kate is doing up in Lincolnshire because she wants to have a child, she wants to have a baby, so she's taking 6 months out. You know what? The clients are really happy because the whole business communicates like Kate. That's how she's trained them. Remember the day I almost sacked Nick, my support person, when I first got him after about 6 months. I spent a year training this guy. I worked my butt off to train this kid. He was a kid. Until he passed all his exams. And then I said to him, no, you're not allowed to put phone calls through until 1 o'clock in any day. I don't care who it is, apart from my wife. You must not put phone calls through. And he had to learn to deal with problems. I trained him. I spent a whole morning with him every Friday morning. Took a tenth of my week out and spent a whole morning training him. After about a year and a half, he could answer every phone call before 1 o'clock at lunchtime. And he never ever put clients through to me. In the end, I had this phone call. Hi, David. Thanks ever so much for bringing Nick up to deal with the new group entrance into the group pension scheme that you're running for us. Not sure how to say this, David, but we love Nick so much. Would you be offended if only he came up next time? Huh? I'm your boy, sir. Aren't they, boys, huh? No, I mean, he did a great job and the kids loved him. I'd worked myself out of a job. I was free. I then took a day off a week, every week, to learn to become a business coach, formal training, for 6 months. It's great. Day off a week, 4-day week, 4 days. In the end, I was able to walk out and hand over the business to my colleagues who bought it from me. Clarify your product very quickly. Here's what your product should contain. Okay, I'm not going to spend time on this because we're only on five and we nearly run out of time. You should know what business strategy you're in. What business are you in? What do I mean by that?
What do you do?
Yeah, it's more than that. There are 8 business strategies and they're in that manifesto manual. I'm only going to give the top 3. There are 8. The number 8 is famous person. Okay, number 1 is get yourself a niche market or not. Business strategy number 1 says I only operate in certain niche markets and I've chosen which niche market. I'm never going to talk to anybody else ever again. That to me is the fastest way to business success in any business in the service industry. The fastest. And the most assured way of getting quality business structured with clients paying you massive fees because you're solving specific problems in a very, very specific market. For example, James only deals with hospital consultants. He knows the problems in their life. Remember that comment? If you can articulate my problem better than I can. He knows intimately why medical practitioners, GPs and hospital consultants are the third highest suicide rate in the country. He knows. And he can talk with them about, at that level, why their stress level is so high. If you look at James's brochure, the first page is all about the stress levels of doctors. Nothing to do with financial planning. Talks about, this is why you're so stressed and why you're so unhappy and why your home life's so miserable, isn't it? And they just say, yeah, how do you know that? Because I'm an expert in my niche market. Expert. Not just good, I'm brilliant. Strategy, okay, so that's one way of operating. Strategy number 2 is you decide, like Nigel Barker-Smith, who was in the December New Model Advisor as cover star, to dominate a locality. I don't care where you live as long as it's Cardiff. And I'm not seeing anybody outside of Cardiff, ever, for any money, for any price. Because I dominate Cardiff. I am the man. I'm the woman. I'm the only financial planner that exists in the whole of Cardiff. Okay, if you don't believe me, come and see me. I dominate my locality, and there are ways of doing that. It's a business strategy. Or, who here, who in the country is the IHT man? The IHT and trust man. Like every advisor seems to know this guy.
Tony Wickham?
Yeah, but he's not a financial planner.
Right,
IHT and trusts. Who dominates the market in people's heads? Heard of David Batchelor?
Yeah.
Strategic coach, works with Dan Sullivan. Dominates in people's heads in the industry, the IHT. Now, there are lots of people better than him, but it doesn't matter. He just dominates the niche. His name is everywhere, and you all know him. And if you don't, you will do. That's a business strategy. Here's the most dangerous one, number 8. Famous person. My clients love me. They love my empathy and my personality. They fall in love with me. They come to me. I am the purpose of their life. That's a really dangerous business game to play. Unless you are a famous person like red braces, red bow tie, beautiful avuncular baby face. Go, who is it? Yeah. You're not, I mean, you're lovely, really. You look so nice this morning. But I have to tell you, nice as you are not famous. And you can't play that game and win in business against your competition who are getting more sophisticated than you are unless you are famous. So stop playing the game. If you don't have a business strategy, and there are lots more beside, then you're operating what I call business by bumble. I didn't make that up. That was made up by a financial planner in Yorkshire. It was a beautiful phrase, business by bumble. I get here in spite of myself. Okay. Just touch upon this. expertise. Being good enough is no longer good enough. Decide on the one or two areas of your business where you are absolutely brilliant and get rid of everything else to somebody else. Being good enough in 2010, this is not 1998 or 1988, it's 2010, is simply no longer good enough. You will lose the war against your competition. I don't care how lovely you are and how many you sign up when they meet with you, if your whole practice, your whole business is not full of 100% perfect, brilliant clients, pay you exactly the fees you want to, find out your expertise and focus on it and stop playing other games. Okay. When your product is clear, then you can price it. Let's quickly to, and then you can become positioned in the heads. Let's quickly, I'm running here. Look, if you want to be paid lots of money, find out what they really want from you. And here are some of the outcomes that they want in your relationship. Do you deliver those outcomes in my mind as your client? Because this is what they'll pay you for. They'll pay you lots of money for these things. My clients do, and I haven't really started charging properly yet. I spoke to one of my peer group, a business coach. They stood up on platform and said this, you ready? So is this, that and the other service we offer here, blah, 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 blah. I've delivered masses of content. I haven't sold myself, but if you want to spend a day with me, it's $18,000. How can I do that? What do you mean, how can I do that? I deliver this. And the reason why people pay me $18,000 for a day is I deliver lots of that. Now, I don't see anywhere on that screen the words pension, investment, inheritance, tax or trusts. And protection. It's not, doesn't exist. They don't pay for that. They pay for this in your relationship. Here's the other thing they'll pay really highly for. Now, it took me a long time to discover this. Remember I talked about outcomes? I couldn't give a hoot about your service. It's of no interest to me whatsoever. It's just a bore. Gets in the way. What I want is outcomes in my life. Here's your question as a financial planner. How can I improve the conditions of their life? Not their money, their lives. Money's just a tool to help me in my life. That's why I'm going to repeat the question again. Are you advising their money or are you advising the client's lives? Make up your mind. When you shift to number two, you will be paid more. Find out how to do that. You know, go to Bill Backrat, go to Dan Sullivan, go to George Kinder. Find out how to talk about people's lives and what they really, really, really want. And it's got nothing to do with pensions and insurance. Nothing. It's just a tool, and they pay lowly for tools. I'll give you an example of this in a report from a client of mine who's appearing at IFP London in July. She hates public speaking, just detests it, starts falling apart, starts shaking, but face-to-face, one-on-one, she's brilliant. The reason why she's got a very successful business, which looks amazing when you walk in the office, it's just mind-blowing. Well, the logo is woven into the carpet. Whoa. It's a heavyweight office. I read, she finally got this. It took about 2 years to get her head around it. But she finally wrote a report which said this. Blah, 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 blah. Pension transfers, blah, blah, blah. SIPs, blah, blah, blah. Occupational scheme, blah, blah, blah. Front page. Measurable, tangible, specific outcomes. Now, James, what you may be able to do now with all this garbage that I've written in the next 15 pages, you'll be able to pay off the mortgage 8 years early. Fairly well-off guy, fairly high position as an executive in corporate UK. And you'll be able to buy Susan, the two horses, and the stable that you've been promising for years but never got around to it. Susan thought it was the most amazing report she'd ever seen. You have to hire this woman. This woman knows what we're all about. And the other 15 pages, he read it, but she wasn't that bothered. And this was a bright lady, the client. She said, I'm getting measurable, tangible, specific outcomes apart from my feelings out of this relationship. We want her in our lives. Yeah? Outcomes. Not service, outcomes. You want to increase your fees so that they pay you for advice, up to £10,000 for report? I spoke to Barry Horner about 2 years ago. I said, Barry, how can you charge £5,000 for the first report? And you've just said to me, when you first started doing this, you could only charge £500. Is the report 10 times as big? He said, no, I'm 10 times more confident in my value. There's all sorts of arguments going on in the industry, but this is my view. You ready? You will lower your fees and lower what clients will pay for you in all three stages if you charge by time. You must cost your time and all of your staff and know what the profit margin is per client relationship. Every client must make a profit and you must measure it, otherwise you're doing business by bumble. How can you run a business where 50% of your clients are actually loss making and you haven't a clue? How can you do that? Somebody is unethically cross-subsidizing your client relationships. To me, that is not ethics. I don't see the morality in that at all. What, you're using my money to pay for the relationship you love over here? Not unless you ask my permission, you don't. I don't follow that at all. Where some clients are making a loss and some clients are making a profit, but you don't know which one it is. You're using their money to pay for these lovely relationships because you love Mrs. Jones. What, to me, that doesn't smack well in business. That is not ethical business behaviour. Unless they know it. I always have two places on my programmes for those that I've chosen, they don't choose me, I choose them, to become what I call Soul Millionaire clients. My group name is Soul Millionaire. That means for 6 months they get all of the services for nothing, and I let all my clients know it. I choose them, I don't tell anybody who they are. There's always one in the north and one in the south. Every single month there's one. And when they drop off after 6 months, I appoint somebody else. I give my services for free because I've chosen to do that for my business. I tithe my business. I do it out of charity because I think, you know what, they just need a leg up out of their hole. But I tell my clients I do that. Okay, I'm not cross-subsidizing. This is what's going on, guys. Okay, just 6 months, it's a three-year program, and then they're away. And they're just mind-blown by it. My wife invented the concept. She said, if you're the sole millionaire and you're supposed to be so generous, why don't you do something generous in your business instead of grabbing all the profit for yourself? Okay. Stop charging for meetings. I'm not paying you to meet with you. I love meeting with you, and I know, you know, the human relationship develops like that. I'm paying you for the outcome. Stop charging me for meetings. That's not an outcome. Stop charging for time, but cost out all your time. Charge for the change in the conditions of their life, and they will pay you highly for it. You charge for meetings. What's the problem with charging for meetings? The annual review meeting. Paid for by the 0.5% fund base. What's the problem with that?
They won't want to see you.
They
won't want to see you.
Well, if you're going to charge anyway, then you justify it by having this annual review meeting. But what's the problem with that?
But don't they just judge everything you do by that meeting? Because that's the only thing.
Yes. Your presence is demanded, even if it's not appropriate. You're charging for your physical presence. That is not a clever way to be able to charge a lot of money. Because supposing you can't make the physical presence, or they don't want the physical presence that year, what then happens to the relationship and the fee structure? What happens if it's
vice versa? Because I know the client,
yeah,
who is paying, say, in excess of £10,000 per annum.
Yeah.
And he wants the advisors to be there.
Fine, that's great. Like, but this. Don't link in their head the meeting with the fee. Link
it. How do you unlink it then?
You
know they just want to be assured.
You have to educate your client what the fee is really for. The fee is for the continuing service concerning the outcomes in their lives. Now, if you've set the client up then you've set the problem. If you set the client up emotionally and mentally to think the meeting equals the fee, you've created a problem for yourself. You need to get help to get out of that hole. That is a seriously dangerous business hole to get into. Your physical presence is the only reason for the fee. That's not what I'm paying you for in my life. I want outcomes and conditions change in my life. That's the reason for behind it.
How do you charge for an outcome?
Talk to me afterwards, I'll tell you, and read the book.
That was sort of going to be my question. You talked about the outcome being the stable, the two horses.
Yes.
In 8 years' time.
Yep.
Don't you run the risk of you're getting paid for an outcome that hasn't... You're being paid on trust.
Tell you what,
you
do.
Get paid when the outcome...
It's a great question. Why don't you spend 2 days with George Kinder or a couple of days with Will Backrack, and they'll show you how to create a relationship which is outcome-based, not time-based.
I totally understand.
Yeah.
But there is a business to run. There are wages to pay and an interest in all the rest
yeah.
of it. I think the trust comes before the outcome. They need to trust you that you have the best chance of reaching
sure.
their outcome.
That's a given. You're not going to get an outcome or a relationship unless there's trust. That's your challenge to develop that long before they ever met with you. Marketing...
But the skill is to generate the trust so that you can build the
that's
relationship
part, that's,
to get the
yeah,
outcome.
That's the beginning of the skill. It's not even a half of it.
No, I appreciate it.
Okay, so all marketing is doing three things. Creating trust before they've ever met with you. Creating influence before they've ever met with you. And creating the position in the head before they've ever met with you. When you learn how to do that, the trust is already there before they walk into the room, and they will chase you. You're then in control of what they'll pay you. When I'm chasing you, and I'm demanding to see you, you're in control. And you can charge me whatever you want to for the outcomes in their life. And you need to define the outcomes in that first series of meetings as the relationship starts, so that every year you keep reviewing the outcomes, and then the outcomes will change as their life changes. So trust is a given. Yeah. Can see you creasing your brow here. Learn how to talk outcomes, not how to talk service. What is it you want in your life that I can help you get to, is the question. And it takes George Kinder 5 days to teach you that. Because you're so heavily myelinated in talking something else. Okay, final two, and then we'll close. Who here gives me a meeting which is non-chargeable for the first meeting as a potential client? Yeah. Personal view, I think it's a huge mistake. Let me tell you why. People will pay you highly, very highly.
You mentioned earlier about the time wasters.
Yeah.
A couple of examples recently, people in the office for me, unbiased, for example, and they present the certificate for an hour's free consultation,
yeah.
that sort of stuff.
Yeah. Then don't do it. Just stop doing it. People will pay you a lot of money if they are two things, committed to the relationship from the very go, from the very word go, totally committed to the relationship, and if they collaborate with you in the relationship. That means they put time and energy and work into it. Before I ever see any financial advisor for the first meeting, you will answer 25 questions in writing and send the 25 answers to me a week before the first meeting, otherwise I cancel the meeting. Not because I want to be arrogant, but because I need you to commit to the relationship and collaborate with me and work on it long before we've ever met. If you're not getting total commitment and total involvement in the relationship where they're giving to you, not you entertaining them in the first meeting and telling them how brilliant you are, all that should be over. They need to be committed and collaborating and working hard at the relationship and giving to the relationship by the time they hit the first meeting. You need to gain their attention, gain their interest. You need to inform them so that they're familiar with you and they trust you before the first meeting. They need to start committing and collaborating with hard work into their relationship before the first meeting. What most of you do is you hope that they trust you before they meet with you, and then you start getting involved in time exchange and energy exchange in the first meeting. It's too late. It needs to happen before the first meeting. Your question is, how do I get them to work for this relationship and to pay me before? How do I do that? Marketing.
But you just said in the previous slide that you don't charge for time or meetings, so now we're supposed to charge.
Sorry.
You said in the previous slide that we're not supposed to charge for the meeting or presence.
No. No.
Don't let them think that the charge is for a meeting. Let them think the charge is
Don't let them think that your presence or your time is what you're charging for in the long ongoing relationship. But if they're going to come to a first meeting, don't give it for free. Everything, every part of the advice relationship is chargeable. If this is your most valuable professional offering, why are you not charging for it? I'm getting serious advice from you in the first meeting. I'm getting a listener to listen to me and my problems in the first meeting. Maybe for an hour, maybe for an hour and a half. That is seriously high value. Charge for the value. Yeah? But make them collaborate and work with you long before the first meeting. Oh, get rid of clients. Every year, review your bottom 10% of clients in terms of how much value they bring to the business. Measure value your way. It could be funds under management. It could be fees that they're paying you. It could be commissions that you've earned in the last year. And find ethical way. I'm not going to go into it in this. There's a whole booklet I've created on that one. Get rid of them ethically and morally and kindly. But do it. Otherwise, you choke your business and you're never able to grow and you'll never find the clients at the top end who will pay you the fees that you're really worth. You're just killing your business.
How can you get rid of clients if you've got to keep the records for so many years?
Sorry?
How can you get rid of clients if you have to keep the records for so many years?
Yeah. So?
Well, just because you keep the records doesn't mean you have to do
that. Keep the records? Yeah. Get rid of the client. Ethically, morally, find an alternative solution for that client in terms of advice and move them on. Preferably not within your business. Preferably not to a junior advisor because you're still choking your business. It may not choke you, but it's choking your business. And find a way to move them away and deal with those clients that you really want in your life. If they're not the clients you really want in your life, they're not delivering high profit value to your business, they're not enjoyable and you don't love them, okay, if they're wasting your time, get rid of them. You deserve, as a professional, with all of your expertise and the hard work you put into it, to have profitable, valuable, enjoyable client relationships. If they're not, get rid of them. Do it ethically and morally. Written about it elsewhere. There are lots of advisors can tell you how to do it ethically and morally, but do it. Otherwise, you just choke your business and stop it being profitable.
By rewriting, assuming that it would be a fixed fee, or do you have it clocked?
Run that through with me again.
You talked about charging for that first meeting. Would your advice be to have a fixed cost for that, or you talked about...
I don't think there's any clever, slick rule to that. Bottom line is, you define what the value is of the meeting. So my meeting is valued at 1,300 quid now, okay? I'm not travelling for nothing. I'm not spending my valuable time, and you know, 20 years of being a financial planner, 15 of that fee-based, plus 6 years of business consultancy for free. Are you joking? I mean, is that a joke? Delivering that value, forget time, value. But I make sure my costs are covered. Finally, oneself is, I'm sorry I've gone over time, but you're getting me passionate here. That's Bryony, our youngest daughter. She's 15 now. I love this kid. I've got 5 children. All the children prefer Bryony to any of the other children. They all adore Bryony. She's just one of those spirits who come to earth and just bring happiness wherever she goes. She just is the most amazing influence on my family. Bryony's committed to dancing. She's passionate about it. And when I say committed, I mean committed. As well as schoolwork, as well as heading for GCSEs, as well as aiming to go to university in the States, she spends six days a week she's dancing for at least an hour a day. She gets up at 6:30 in the morning. She does religious study for an hour with a group of friends in our church. She comes back at 7:30 and she's exhausted before the day starts. She goes through a day's schoolwork and in the evening, 6 days a week, she's dancing. She's so committed to being brilliant. That's her dancing in the snow when it snowed. She wanted to give mummy a present. Okay? She wanted to give Mummy a present about how much she loved her. So she got a photographer to take her and her sister in the snow with Bryony bare feet in the middle of a huge field, and it was freezing. She's just committed to learning, 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 and pushing herself to the edge of her very capabilities and beyond, beyond anything. Saw her dancing in the weekend, and I was just stunned. Who is this kid? She's so amazing on the stage. Dancing in the national finals of modern dance in the UK. She didn't win, but she was good. Commit yourself to lifelong learning. If you want to be able to charge high fees, I spend 100 hours a quarter in research and education that I pay for. 100 hours a quarter, 400 hours a year. Every year for 6 years. Why? Because Craig deserves me to be at least one step ahead of him, if not a lot more. Heavy commitment to lifelong learning. I spoke to one advisor who hired me and I said, why doesn't she take her CFP exams, her support team? Oh, she doesn't want to take any more exams. Then sack her. She did. Just sacked her. If you're not prepared to commit to lifelong learning in my business, you don't belong here. I need somebody who does. And she sacked her.
You
know,
I'd
say. Sorry?
Did she get taken to a tribunal?
No, she didn't. Part of a contract, and she was disobeying it. Gerard, if you take a member of staff on, they had to take CFP as support staff and all secretaries, otherwise they left. Lifelong learning. You decide the standard, but the whole team must commit to lifelong learning. Is my personal view. And when I hear whinges about exams, I just gasp. I just think that's so amateurish. I don't care what age you are. I'm older than most of you. Lifelong learning, to the day you stop breathing, is what clients will pay you highly for. Okay, I've been really tough today because I just think there's a lot at stake. You deserve more out of your business in order to free more time, earn more money for the time that you put in, and give clients the value that they really desire from you. But first you've got to find out what it is. And they will pay you highly at every single one of these three stages. If you just find out how to do these things, thank you so much for your time. Go and earn some more money. Thank you.
Thanks, David.